Hello and welcome to NLP's Planning News Update for November. I'm Ian Rind and I'm here again with Nicola Furlonger and Maggie Badley to discuss the latest planning law, policy and practice developments throughout the UK. And I'm pleased to say that joining us today is our colleague Rob Morehouse to talk about this month's publication of new rules for Community Infrastructure Levy and what they should mean for developers once they're in force. So turning to you first, Maggie, we should start with the Prime Minister and CLG now promoting the second of the new planning-related bills.
Yes, thanks, Ian. So number 10 is trying to show the development sector that the government is truly committed to using the planning system to promote economic growth. That's after all the announcements focused on housing and infrastructure last month. So there's a new growth and infrastructure bill that was announced in mid-October. It's already had its second reading and it's now passed to committee stage. So there's a chance for the development sector to comment on what it proposes.
So what does this bill cover? I see it's relatively short, at only 42 pages.
Yes, it is mainly planning and infrastructure again too, of course. But the planning clauses cover, for example, a new option to make a planning application direct to the Secretary of State, which is likely to be where a local planning authority has been underperforming previously. And also the Secretary of State can bring business and commercial projects within the development consents regime that's only been used up till now for nationally significant infrastructure projects. So that's another time where local planning authorities could be bypassed once again.
And adding to the planning measures, there's proposals to reduce the information required with a planning application. Local authorities will have to ensure that that information is reasonable and that it relates to a material consideration in determining the application. There's also proposals to assist in modifying or discharging the affordable housing requirements of Section 106 obligations. And there'll be new restrictions on objectors using the Village Green registration system to stymie development.
Yes, I heard Nick Bowles, who's the planning minister at CLG, at the CLG Select Committee, say that he fully supported the measures announced in September, despite the committee chair referring to the package as being an afterthought post-MPPF. Bowles is saying that he sees the planning system being at the heart of a very long-term problem, historically, of bringing forward too little land for development, which to me seems a rather narrow view of the problems of getting development underway these days. But what do you think Nick Bowles is trying to achieve here, Maggie?
Well, he's new and I think he's putting down a marker. He's since made a statement in the House of Commons that the government's call-in policy for planning applications has been changed as well. So whatever the intended consequences...
Just stop there a bit, Maggie. You talked about changes to the call-in rules. I think that's quite... or rather call-in policy. I think that's quite a significant change, isn't it? Can you explain?
Yes, well, the main thing is a new criterion has been added so that the Secretary of State can call in a planning application which may have a significant long-term effect on economic growth and meeting housing needs across more than one local authority area. He can also call in an application now that raises cross-boundary controversy.
So, Rob, let's talk about the new SIL rules, what they're going to mean for developers.
Well, once they're in force, which is likely to be by the end of this month, the new regs should overcome some, but not all, of the issues that have arisen with the operation of the 2010 regs and the 2011 amendments.
And what are the problems they're going to overcome?
Well, one of the key areas that will hopefully be fully dealt with is the application of SIL in relation to Section 73 variation of condition planning permissions. As it stands, a Section 73 permission can give rise to SIL liability, creating problems of potential double charging of a SIL on the original permission and replacement.
And what about a Section 73 application which is looking to change a condition on a scheme allowed before a SIL charging regime was in place? What happens there?
Yeah, that's been dealt with too, and it is something that the development industry has been lobbying on for some time now. The new rules will correct various other errors, and for example, calculation formula in relation to retention of buildings, social housing relief, and finally the new regs will ensure that planning permission granted to extend time limits under DMPO won't have to pay SIL at all.
Well, that all sounds like good news, even if this is just correcting the bad drafting of the original regulations. But are there other areas which are still problematic, Nicola?
Yes, there are, and there are various issues that have previously been consulted on or raised that haven't been addressed. One being the use of SIL for funding social housing, and also the use of or the allocation of funds, SIL funds, to neighbourhood groups. That hasn't been dealt with. Also, the amendment regulations don't tackle the issues that arise when assessing whether existing buildings have been in use or not, and that's used in the calculation of net floor space against which SIL is applied. The last issue continues to cause much confusion.
Yeah, there's also still a development industry working group looking into the wider SIL issues, including impact on development viability.
So it seems that once again we'll be having to keep a close eye on SIL, as it's clearly a moving feast, and it looks like we could expect some amended rules on almost an annual basis, Rob.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so let's turn to the latest news on changes to the listed building consents regime, a subject close to my heart, Maggie.
Yes, well, there are new amendments to a bill that's already going through Parliament, the Enterprise and Regulatory Reform Bill. You might remember in that it's already got some limited heritage protection measures in it, such as heritage partnership agreements. But anyway, the latest amendments, they reflect a DCMS response to a recent consultation on improving listed building consents. And these amendments include a new system of national and local class consents that'll grant listed building consent automatically for certain categories of works or buildings without the need for an application. And there's also to be a new certificate of lawfulness of proposed works to listed buildings. And that'll provide a mechanism for local planning authorities to confirm formally that listed building consent isn't required where proposed works wouldn't impact on special interest.
And Nicola, weren't there some other listed building consent proposals consulted on in the summer?
Yes, there are, Ian. The option of a system of prior notification leading to deemed consent is not being taken forward for practical reasons at the moment. And then the system of accredited agents, which was planned, is only being introduced via a light touch system, so there's no statutory changes there. And then finally, on reforming enforcement powers for buildings at risk, DCMS said that it will consider what further measures are needed or most appropriate, so that's not happening now.
Okay, well, it looks like these options, when taken together, the ones that are actually going to be enacted, should simplify and speed up what I personally find to be all too often a lengthy and somewhat onerous process in applying for listed building consent.
Yes, that's right. And unfortunately, DCMS has already stated that there aren't any other plans to change the listed building consent regime further. And it seems that there won't be measures introduced to help reduce the level of detailed information that will still be required in support of listed building applications.
Well, in the meantime, we have a small consolation in the publication of English Heritage's Useful Online Guide to Heritage Protection. That sets out how legislation, policy and guidance related to England's heritage assets works, particularly in the areas of designation and applying for listed building consent. So it's well worth a look at that. So before we end today, what about the Mayor of London? Has he been as busy as last month?
Yeah, if I can come in here and back on SIL. He's promised to produce some London-wide guidance shortly. We think from what's been said, it may well focus on how boroughs can cooperate to produce charging schedules with less disparity in rates between land uses and areas.
Well, that sounds like a helpful initiative. What about mayoral planning decisions of note, Nicola?
Well, there's been one in particular. The Mayor has rather controversially approved plans for the redevelopment of the London Fruit and Wool Exchange in Spitalfields, and that overturns the decision of the Council to refuse planning permission here. The Mayor argued that the plans will make a vital contribution to the wider London economy and have a significant impact not just on Tower Hamlets but also on surrounding boroughs as well.
Well, I'm afraid our time has run out. I'd like to thank Nicola, Maggie and Rob for joining me today, and we look forward to reporting again next month. Before then, you can visit our website for more details of today's podcast, useful downloads and the latest planning news.